ready for a story. One with, well, everything. We're talking wisdom, wealth, power, and even a little, maybe, scandal. You ready to dive into the reign of King Solomon?
Oh, Solomon's story. It really does have it all, doesn't it? It's like a turning point, you know? Yeah. One of those moments in history that just teaches us so much about leadership and faith and really about just being human. And we've got some amazing sources to work with here. A real mix. Lectures from Dr. Elaine Phillips. We'll be diving into 1 Kings and Chronicles. And we've even got a visual aid for this one, a model of Solomon's temple to help us really picture this whole period.
A model. That's fantastic. I love when we have visuals. Okay, so Solomon. Can't talk about Solomon without talking about his father, right? King David. Seems like a pretty big, pretty influential figure. How does David's reign sort of set the stage for Solomon?
Yeah, David's legacy is huge here. Can't really understand Solomon without understanding David. See, David, he unified the kingdom, fought off enemies, you know the story, and even started getting things ready for building the first temple in Jerusalem. He even bought the land on Mount Moriah, prime real estate, right? It was a threshing floor, basically like a big open space where they used to process grain. And that spot, that's where Solomon would eventually build his temple.
Wow. So David really, he laid the groundwork, literally and figuratively. But we all know successions, they don't always go so smoothly. Especially royal families.
Right.
What happens as David, you know, gets older? Who's going to take over?
Oh, things get messy. As David's getting older, everyone's wondering who's going to be king next. It's the big question. And one of his sons, Adonijah, well, he decides he's not going to wait around to find out. Yeah. Starts gathering support, tries to make himself king. Bit impatient, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, just grabs the throne. I mean, was he even next in line?
Well, he might have thought so. But David, he already had his mind made up. He wanted Solomon to be king. And it wasn't just, you know, a dad picking favorites. David believed it was God's will for Solomon to rule. So you've got this conflict brewing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shows just how, I don't know, unstable power can be.
Right, right. So David wants Solomon, but Adonijah's making moves. What happens? Do they, like, have a sword fight for the crown?
Not quite a sword fight. But Adonijah, he tries this power play. He asks for Abishag to be his wife.
Abishag.
She was this young woman who was taking care of David, you know, as he was getting older.
Yeah.
And in those days, marrying your father's wife, that was a way of, like, claiming his authority, claiming everything he owned, including the kingdom.
Whoa. Okay, that's bold. Like something out of a, I don't know, a movie. So how does David react to that?
Oh, he takes action. Fast. The prophet Nathan and Bathsheba, Solomon's mother, they urge him to act. So David, he arranges for Solomon to be crowned king at the Gihon Spring. And this is important. The Gihon Spring, it was the main water source for Jerusalem. It symbolized, like, life, continuity. And get this, they have Solomon ride David's mule during the ceremony.
They're not being subtle, are they? Sending a message loud and clear.
Oh, yeah. It's all very symbolic.
Wow. I mean, religion and politics all mixed together. That's amazing. It's not just a ceremony. It's a whole strategy. So Solomon's the king. What's he like as a ruler?
Well, that's where those 4 W's come in, yeah. Right? Dr. Phillips, she talks about how Solomon's reign was defined by wisdom, women, wealth, and worship. And we're going to see how each of those played a role in, well, everything.
4 W's, gotta love it. Okay, so wisdom. Why was Solomon considered so wise?
The story goes that early on, God appeared to Solomon in a dream, offered him anything he wanted. And Solomon, he asks for wisdom. Not wealth, not power, not a long life, but wisdom. He knew that to be a good king, he needed to understand things, to make good decisions. He even goes to Gibeon, where the tabernacle was, to offer sacrifices and to pray for guidance.
That's pretty humble, realizing that wisdom is, like, the most valuable thing. Didn't he have a famous court case, too? Something about a baby?
Oh, yeah. The two women and the baby. A classic Solomon story. Two women, both claiming to be the mother of this baby. No witnesses, just their word against each other.
Yeah.
Impossible to know who's telling the truth, right? But Solomon, he comes up with this plan, says he's going to cut the baby in half and give half to each woman.
Wait, seriously, that's kind of dark, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was a test, a bluff, you could say. And it worked. The real mother, she begs him to stop, says he can give the baby to the other woman, just don't hurt the child. But the other woman, she's fine with it. So Solomon knows right away who the real mother is.
Wow, that's clever. He figures it out by their reaction. So he really used his wisdom, not just like knowing things, but actually putting it into practice.
Exactly. That's what made him such a good ruler.
Okay, so far, Solomon sounds pretty great, but something tells me it's not all, you know, smooth sailing. What about those other W's? Women, wealth, and worship. Where do those fit in?
Well, that's where things get a little bit more, shall we say, complicated. Those other W's, they're part of the successes, but also Yeah, the downfall of Solomon's reign.
Ooh, okay, now I'm really interested. Let's hear about women first. What's the story there?
Yeah. Well, Solomon, he was known for having, well, a lot of wives.
A lot.
A lot. 700 wives and 300 concubines. That's what the Bible says. And these weren't just, you know, love matches. A lot of these marriages were strategic, ways to make alliances with other kingdoms.
700. Wow. That's a lot of anniversaries to remember. But wasn't there something like a rule against that? Kings taking so many wives?
You're thinking of Deuteronomy and the Torah. It warns kings about having too much wealth, too many horses, and yeah, too many foreign wives. The idea was that foreign wives might lead the kings away from, you know, worshiping the God of Israel, might tempt them with other gods.
So even back then, they knew that those political marriages, they could backfire.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's move on to wealth then. Did these marriages make Solomon rich?
They played a role, but it was more than just the marriages. Solomon, he controlled major trade routes. Like the International Coastal Highway. That was like the main route for all the merchants, all the trade. Think of it like, I don't know, controlling the Amazon or Alibaba of the ancient world.
So he was making bank on those taxes and tributes. But didn't you say Deuteronomy warns against too much wealth too?
It does. It says kings shouldn't be focused on getting rich. They should be good leaders, you know, focus on the people, not on piling up gold and silver.
So was Solomon listening? Was all this wealth a problem?
That's something people debate even today. Some say it was a sign of God's blessing, you know, sign of a successful kingdom. Others say it was too much, that he went against what Deuteronomy said.
Okay, so it's a bit of a gray area. Fascinating how these ancient texts still get people talking. All right, we've got wisdom, women, and wealth. What about the last W, worship? Solomon built the first temple in Jerusalem, right? Was that like a sign of his faith or something else?
Yeah, the temple is a huge part of Solomon's story. It was this massive project, showed his devotion to God, and he wanted to make Jerusalem the center of worship for the Israelites. But like everything with Solomon, it's complicated.
Okay, I'm hooked. Tell me about this temple.
That's where we'll pick up next time. We'll talk about what it meant, the symbolism, and what it all says about Solomon's leadership.
Okay, back to Solomon and those four W's. We're on worship now, right? Which brings us to, like, the biggest thing he built, the temple, the first temple in Jerusalem. That's got to be a huge deal. What was that all about?
Oh, yeah, the temple. That was a statement. I mean, this wasn't just a building. It was the, like, crown jewel of Solomon's kingdom, a way of showing God's presence right there with his people. And the design, it was supposed to, like, reflect the cosmos, the whole universe, the Holy of Holies, right in the center. That was where God dwelled. Basically, where heaven and earth met.
So they were trying to create like a little piece of heaven on earth.
Yeah.
Amazing. Were there any details that really stand out? Anything that, I don't know, that we would recognize?
Oh, they had these huge cherubim, you know, those winged creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
They put those in the Holy of Holies right next to the Ark of the Covenant. And that's where it gets a bit tricky. Because, you know, the Israelites weren't supposed to make images.
Right.
Right? No graven images.
Right, right.
But they saw these cherubim as like symbols of God's presence, not idols. You know, it's interesting how they kind of blended things, their own traditions and what other cultures were doing.
It makes you wonder how people back then, how they would have seen those images. Were they just like symbols or was it more, you know, more awe-inspiring? But besides the grandeur, the symbolism, what did people actually do at the temple?
Oh, it was the center of everything religious. Sacrifices, festivals, you name it. People would go there to pray, to ask for guidance, to feel connected to God. And they also kept, like, national treasures there, important documents, yeah, that sort of thing.
So it was like a church, a museum, and a national archive all in one. Wow. But we were talking earlier about how even though Solomon was this great king, things weren't perfect, right? Were there, like, warning signs?
Good memory. Yeah, the temple, it was a symbol of all the great things Solomon did. But there were problems, too. Remember those warnings we talked about kings getting too much wealth, too many foreign wives? Solomon, well, he kind of ignored all that. All those wives, the wealth, and even he started letting people worship other gods.
Oh, no. So, like, even the wisest king, he can make mistakes, right? Maybe power and wealth is just too tempting.
It's a question a lot of people have asked. And for Solomon, well, his choices had consequences. The Book of Kings, it says that his wives, they turned his heart away from God.
Mm-hmm.
He even built shrines to those other gods. And that was, like, a direct violation of his covenant with God.
The covenant. Can you remind me what that is?
Oh, yeah. The covenant was this agreement between God and the Israelites.
Right.
Way back with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Basically, God said he would protect them, bless them, and they would worship only him and follow his laws.
So Solomon, by worshiping other gods, he was breaking that agreement big time.
Yeah, huge deal. And God, he was angry. He said he would tear the kingdom away from Solomon, but, and this is important, he also said he wouldn't do it while Solomon was alive, out of respect for David, you know, Solomon's father. So Solomon would be king until he died, but after that, the kingdom would be divided.
So it's like God was giving him a second chance, but even if Solomon didn't face the consequences, the kingdom would. Did Solomon, like, ever realize he messed up? Did he try to fix things?
It's hard to say. The Bible doesn't really tell us. But we know that he was king for another 30 years after that. And those problems, those cracks in the kingdom, they started getting bigger. Remember Hadad and Rezon, those guys who opposed Solomon? They start causing more trouble, weakening the kingdom.
So it's like trouble from inside and outside. And then there was Jeroboam, right? What was his role in all of this?
Oh, Jeroboam's story is really important here. He was like a high-ranking official in Solomon's government. A smart guy, but he got disillusioned. Saw how Solomon was spending all this money, focusing on wealth, letting all these other influences in. It's like he could see that things were going wrong.
Okay, Jeroboam was like the voice of the people who were unhappy. Did he like speak out, protest?
Yeah. Well, one day he's traveling and he meets this prophet, Ahijah. And prophets, they were a big deal back then. People believed they spoke for God. So Ahijah, he walks up to Jeroboam and does something pretty wild. He tears his cloak into 12 pieces.
His cloak? Like in public? What was that about?
It was symbolic. 12 pieces for the 12 tribes of Israel. And he gives 10 of those pieces to Jeroboam. He says, God is going to take 10 tribes away from Solomon and give them to Jeroboam to rule. Basically, he was saying the kingdom is going to be divided.
Wow, that's a pretty dramatic way to make a point. What did Solomon do when he heard about this?
He was furious. Tried to kill Jeroboam. Jeroboam, he escaped to Egypt. Went to the Pharaoh for protection.
Okay, so Jeroboam's safe for now. What about Solomon?
He kept ruling. All the prophecies, all the problems. He was king until he died. Ruled for 40 years. And his legacy, it's complicated.
Yeah, what a story. Starts out so promising, right? All that wisdom, all that power. And then it all falls apart. Reminds us that even the best leaders, they're still human. They can make bad choices. What happened after Solomon died? Was the kingdom divided? Like right away.
Well, that's a story for part three of our deep dive. We'll talk about what happened next, how the kingdom split, and what it all meant for Israel.
Back again for our final deep dive into Solomon's reign. Things were getting pretty tense last time, right? Kingdom on the verge of splitting, prophecies flying around. What happens right after Solomon, you know, kicks the bucket?
Well, it wasn't exactly a peaceful transition, let's put it that way. What? Solomon's son, Rehoboam, he's the heir, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a problem, a big one. Jeroboam, he's back from Egypt, ready to take what he believes is rightfully his. You know, that 10-tribe kingdom the prophet promised him.
Oh, yeah. Things are about to get interesting. So Rehoboam the son versus Jeroboam the, well, the challenger. What happens? Did they try to work things out?
They did meet, yeah. But Rehoboam, well, he wasn't exactly known for being, you know, the listening type. People were tired, you got to remember. They had been through a lot under Solomon. Taxes, forced labor, all that. They were hoping Rehoboam would be different, you know, give him a break.
Yeah, a fresh start. A king who actually, like, cared about them.
Exactly. But, well, Rehoboam, he listens to the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
His buddies, these young guys, they tell him to be tough, to show everyone who's boss. So Rehoboam, he basically tells the people, my dad was tough on you. Well, I'm going to be even tougher. Get ready for some serious punishment.
Wow, okay. Not the best way to win people over, is it?
Not at all. People were angry, felt like he didn't even care. So the 10 northern tribes, they'd had enough. Jeroboam, he leads them in rebellion. They say, nope, we're done. We're our own kingdom now. And that's how the kingdom of Israel was born.
The prophecy came true. The kingdom split. Man, if only Rehoboam had just listened, right? Maybe things could have been different. What about the other tribes? Did they stick with Rehoboam?
Yeah, Judah and Benjamin, they stayed loyal to Rehoboam. They formed the kingdom of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And this split, it was huge. Changed everything for the region. Politics, religion, everything.
It's kind of a turning point, you know? A what if moment. What if Rehoboam had been a different kind of leader? Okay, so now we got two kingdoms. Did they get along? Or is it all like fighting and drama?
There was definitely tension. Lots of it. They were rivals now, you know, competing for everything. And Jeroboam, he wanted to make sure his kingdom, Israel, stayed separate. So he does something, well, pretty controversial. He sets up these golden calves in Bethel and Dan.
Golden calves? Like idols?
Kinda, yeah. He was trying to create his own, like, religious identity for the Northern Kingdom.
Yeah.
Didn't want people going back to Jerusalem to worship.
So Solomon's bad choices, they really mess things up. Not just politically, but, like, spiritually, too. Wow. So how do people remember Solomon? Is he the wise king or the one who messed everything up?
It's both, really. People remember his wisdom, the things he built, how he expanded the kingdom. He was a symbol of success, for sure. But they also remember that he disobeyed God, that he went too far, and that, yeah, he's the reason the kingdom split apart. It's like a warning, you know? Mm-hmm. Even the smartest, most successful people, they can still make terrible mistakes.
Yeah, and those mistakes, they can have consequences for everyone.
Yeah.
So what can we learn from all of this, from Solomon's whole story, I mean?
I think it tells us that leadership, it's not just about being smart or powerful. It's about character, about making the right choices, even when it's hard. And it reminds us that we all have weaknesses, even the best of us. We have to be careful not to let those weaknesses, those desires, control us.
Great insights. Really makes you think, you know.
Cool.
Thanks for taking us on this deep dive. It's been quite a journey. And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us. We hope you learned something new, that you're thinking about Solomon, about leadership, about the choices we all make. That's what the deep dive is all about. Keep exploring.